The only way you can take ESPN Rochester with you is the Radio.com app. Download it today and listen to us anytime, anywhere. The sports leader, ESPN Rochester.
Back in the sports bar with Danger and Battaglia. Time to get the latest from One Bills Drive. Covering the Buffalo Bills for ESPN, ESPN.com. Mike Rodak joining us in the sports bar on, I believe, phone number two. Mike, phone two today?
Yes, sir. Phone right. Number two.
204. We haven't gotten up to the phone one on the depth chart, but that's okay. We'll take phone two today, Mike. Mike, how are you? Everything good?
I am doing well, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
just hanging out, enjoying a nice, meaningful December, you know, in Buffalo.
Well, you can't, at least did you get some golf in when you went down to South Florida last week, Mike?
We did. It's weird. It's funny. I probably hadn't played since, I don't know, the second week of October. And we walk up to the first tee. I didn't warm up. I didn't go to the range or anything. Walk up to the first tee, and I took one practice swing and hit the drive 280 down the middle. And I looked at Jay Skursky, who I was golfing with from the Buffalo News, and I'm like, I don't get golf. I don't understand the game. Because then my second shot, I was probably chipping from, I don't know, 80 yards out, and, you know, I shanked it.
Yeah, so you don't want to have that as your first shot because it's all downhill from there. The rest of your afternoon isn't going to be as enjoyable as that first shot. You might as well have just picked up your ball after hitting it 280 and just said, all right, I'm good.
Yeah, go to the bar. And
that's it.
Walk the rest of the round from there. I should have.
Is Calvin Benjamin going to be working on his golf game for the rest of this year? Do you think that he's going to end up with a team? We know he's visiting the Chiefs today.
I think he will. I think the biggest impediment would have been his contract, which that's a big reason why I think teams weren't willing to trade for him, and I think that's why he wasn't claimed off waivers yesterday either, was the approximately $2 million that would have been left right now, or the $4 million that would have been left at the trade deadline. So I would imagine that you're probably talking about a close to a minimum salary deal for the rest of the year, meaning probably three games at this point, because he probably won't, you know, be playing until next week. And just either a team that's in the playoff hunt that needs some help at receiver and is going to take a chance on him, or B, a team that is looking potentially to sign him next season and might want to get a trial run in. An audition of sorts right now. So those are the two scenarios. I want to say it's a guarantee that he signs by the end of the year, but I certainly think it's more likely than not.
Mike, if we had to do the post-mortem on Kelvin Benjamin, I'm sure you know he wasn't a fan favorite. Why didn't it work out for him in the end? How much of this did he bring upon himself?
I think less than the public or the fans might believe. I know there is a perception out there that he was overweight and lazy and didn't put forth a lot of effort, wasn't in good condition. I think that's true to an extent, but I think that was overblown. And I think Matt Fairburn did a good job of explaining that in his story this week. I agree with him. I saw a lot of the same things where, you know, you see even on Twitter this week that, you know, flags going to half staff at McDonald's, people making that joke that, you know, he was fat or whatever. Look, I mean, we're in the locker room. We see these guys that, quite frankly, various stages of dress, and he wasn't fat. That wasn't his problem. You know, the effort, you know, they can certainly pick through the film. I think there was some obvious plays over the course of the year where, you know, he probably wasn't putting forth the most effort, but I think it's hard for me to question effort for any player. Just knowing, you know, what it takes to play in the NFL and that there's a lot of different things that go into each play. So honestly, I don't think that really was the biggest factor. I think it's more about him not producing, which is partly a factor of just who he is. I mean, he's never a fast player. He's never a guy who's going to get a ton of separation. What made his name in Carolina his first year was being able to make those contested catches. And he hasn't been able to do that. I mean, there's been a lot of cases where he's dropped the ball quite literally when he's had to go up in the end zone or across the middle of the field. And that's been his biggest issue. And then also, I think the knees certainly play a role there, where he's now had surgery on both knees. issues, obviously, last year with the meniscus that he never overcame at surgery. Came back this year, and it never quite looked right. I know he said that, you know, health-wise, he was fine. There was definitely some times at practice, especially within the last few weeks, where you'd see, you know, he had a sleeve over over one of his legs, over his knee, seemed to be laboring a little bit. So I would imagine health and just overall, you know, what the knees have left, I think will play a role there. But just, again, not producing. The bottom line wasn't there, and clearly there was very little chance of him coming back next season, and why not get a look at one of the younger guys and sort of clear the decks? And that's why I think there was the release of both players, Kelvin Benjamin and Andre Holmes. So I think it's unfair to single out Kelvin Benjamin as being, well, he was fat, he was lazy, they cut him because of that. No, they cut the two oldest receivers on their roster. Granted, they kept Deontay Thompson, and then they cleared the decks for some of the younger guys to get more playing time.
Mike, we also got the bit of news this week that Taron Johnson had shoulder surgery, and that's going to be it for his season. We won't get to see him the final quarter season. What does that mean for the Bills moving forward? We're going to see more Ryan Lewis. We're going to see some more of the newly promoted Denzel Rice. What do you think the plan is to replace Johnson there as a slot corner?
I think right now the plan will be Raphael Bush, who has, you know, been that slot guy when either Taron Johnson has been hurt or there's been some other circumstance that has put him in the lineup. I know sometimes they like to play the quote-unquote big nickel, where Bush is in there instead of Taron Johnson, you know, for a bigger body, maybe against the tight end or bigger receiver out there. I think that will be plan A. And then I think from there, they'll try to work in, as you mentioned, Denzel Rice, probably him before Ryan Lewis. I think Ryan Lewis projects more as an outside corner, but I would still like to see Ryan Lewis maybe split some playing time with Levi Wallace. I know we saw a lot of Lewis when he first came up to the roster, the Vikings game especially, and then he's really been inactive for a while now, hasn't played much at all. So I would like to see him and what he can do, and I'm sure the Bills would, you know, share the same opinion as they go into the offseason. But I would imagine some mixture of those players over the final four games here, just as they try to figure out what they have.
Mike Ronak, ESPN.com. Word today at practice, Isaiah McKenzie, a toe injury. What do we know about McKenzie? What happened today here, Mike?
Yeah, I didn't see it personally. I know Joe Bisar down at that end of the field, and apparently he, you know, made a cut in his route as they were warming up, and he pulled up, and like you said, it ended up being a toe injury. Sean McDermott really didn't seem to indicate that it was overly serious when we talked to him after practice. He just said that he was being evaluated. I can't imagine that it's anything, you know, that will, you know, sideline him for the rest of the season. I think that would be surprising. It might maybe be something for this week, and then maybe he's back next week. That would be my best guess, just based on, you know, the nature of a toe injury, unless he broke it. But it's, you know, early in practice, it's a warm-up. That's probably unlikely. So, you know, worst-case scenario for the Bills that he's out this week, and in that case, you're probably running with Zay Jones, Deontay Thompson, and Robert Foster as your top three receivers, and then maybe you start to work Ray McLeod in there as the number four option, because he, just like Ryan Lewis, he's been inactive for a few weeks now, seems to have fallen behind some of the other young receivers on the roster in terms of trust from the coaching staff and how much they want to implement him in the offense. Obviously, he had his issues, I want to say, back in October in the return game, and being reliable there. But it doesn't seem like he's at the same point where they can throw him in there at receiver and trust him. So I think he's a notch behind, but maybe this allows him a chance to be out there on the field. And at this point of the season, it's a case of, you know, what do the Bills have to lose?
Mike, the Bills had one of their best running weeks of the season against the Jets a few weeks back. I'm curious about the offensive line, the state of the offensive line. John Miller back at practice today?
Yeah, he's been back this week, and it seems like he's very much on track to start again at right guard, and then obviously they'll run with Ryan Groig at center in place of Russell Bodine, who's out for the year with that broken leg, and then Jeremiah Searles being the most likely option to back them up at guard and center. But I would also expect them to try to work in Ike Bucker some more. They started to do it last week, I think it was at least for a series at the end of the first half against the Dolphins at guard. Sort of given the what they've done already this year with Wyatt Teller, I'd imagine they try to get him in some more this week and maybe even some more down the road as well as they try to figure out what they have in Ike Bucker, the undrafted rookie from Iowa. So it could be a mixture of different guys in there. You know, might not be the same offensive line the entire game.
Mike Rodeck, ESPN.com, joining us. So Bills, fairly obvious. They weren't going to bring back Kelvin Benjamin, so they moved on from him. Andre Holmes, all right, maybe they make that move for the same reason. So that's part one of the question. Why Holmes? And then why not the guy at tight end, Mike? I mean, what percentage chance would you say that actually Charles Clay will be in a Buffalo Bills uniform in 2019? Because if it's time to look at other guys, you know, why is Clay still here?
I would put it at 30% for a couple of reasons. I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that he is gone. Number one, because of his contract. And the original contract itself was one of the worst moves the Bills have made in quite some time. I said that when the move was made, that they way overpaid for him coming up from Miami to try to, you know, lure him away. And what Doug Whaley said about, you know, we're giving us an addition and we're taking something away from a divisional opponent as well. That was dumb. What was even worse is what they did the next offseason in 2016 when they restructured that contract, pushed a lot of the money down the road. And so at this point, in a normal contract, you're entering the fifth and final year of his deal. Typically, you're able to cut a player and not have to worry about any sort of salary cap hit. In this case, the Bills could cut him in the offseason, and they'll still owe him half of his contract against the salary cap, $4.5 million out of $9 million. So you're talking about a 50% dead money hit for cutting him. You know, they obviously have shown a pretty strong willingness to take on the dead money, but I don't think that, you know, makes it an automatic decision on their part. And then the second reason why I think there could be some hesitance to part ways with Charles Clay is that you don't really have a whole lot behind them. I know there's a lot of, I guess, fan promise in Jason Krug. He's made a few plays here and there. I'm not so sold on him. I think he's, you know, at best probably a, you know, marginal number two, number three tight end in the league, kind of a Chris Gregg type where he's athletic, he's fast, but maybe he doesn't put it all together. That's, you know, partly the reason why he was undrafted a couple of years ago. And besides that, I mean, Logan Thomas, I think, you know, he's kind of run his course. I don't know if you're going to get much more out of him at this point. They, you know, they've tried for a couple of years now to get him going at tight end. He really hasn't. So unless you can go out in the draft, draft somebody at tight end who you're comfortable putting in there, or maybe they sign somebody in free agency, you might have to roll with the same group for just a little while longer until you can find your plan B. So that's the one reason, or the two reasons why I think Charles Clay could stick, but, you know, it certainly would make sense to move on from him at this point because the production just simply hasn't been there.
Mike, let's talk about some of the other deals that might be considered bad deals. I really want to see this team try to get built around you know, system and value and a consistent system that they can stick with, and then getting value out of the players that are on the roster. Are there any deals that stick out to you as you know, whether they be current deals that were structured by this regime or even the Whaley regime, where you look at it and you're like, oh, we're just not getting any value out of that deal? Of course, the Clay being, you know, one of the biggest offenders, but, you know, I would say, look at LeSean McCoy's deal. Do we feel like Jerry Hughes is presenting a value given what he's making? Are there any other, you know, questionable deals on this roster right now?
Well, those are the first two names that came to mind for me, just because those, along with Clay, are three of your top five cap hits right now. The other two being Starlet Tulele and I believe, well, it would have been Kelvin Benjamin. I think now it's Trent Murphy who's in the top five. So, yeah, I mean, look, I think this entire offensive backfield should be overhauled as quickly as possible. And I know I've been beating that drum for a while. I'm just not sure what LeSean McCoy has left. I think there's something left. I don't think it's nearly what he had a couple years ago. And that's a big problem. I just, you know, you give him the ball in space, he's not making the plays that he once did. And he's not totally adapting his playing style. And I don't think he has the body type to adapt his playing style where he can, instead of trying to go left and right and make guys miss, just go straight forward and try to break a tackle. That's not really working either. And besides that Jets game a couple weeks ago, the production just simply hasn't been there for LeSean McCoy. And if you're running into 2019 thinking, all right, maybe he can rebound and, you know, he's going to be 31 years old and we'll get one more year out of him, I think that's playing with fire. So, you know, you could have gotten rid of him at the trade deadline, try to get something back. They didn't. Maybe they try again in the spring and see what's out there in terms of a market for him. I don't know if it'll be much given, you know, what's on film from this season. And I think Chris Ivory, you know, if you want to look at a contract as well, that's, I think, $2.5 million a year right there. He's been productive at times this year. In fact, I think he's been more productive than Sean McCoy, but same situation where he's going to be 31 next year. You know, you got to get younger in the backfield. That has to be near the top of your priorities going into this offseason, because quite frankly, the running game has been one of the big reasons why this offense has not worked this season, you know, on the whole. Obviously, the last couple of weeks it's been more productive, but a lot of that has been Josh Allen and what he's been able to do with his legs. So Marcus Murphy, you know, 27 years old next year, I don't really see it with him. I think, you know, he's not your running back of the future. And, you know, who does that leave you with? Keith Ford on the practice squad, undrafted rookie. But, you know, the odds are against him as well. So that's the main area where I think they need a major overhaul this offseason, similar to what they did after the 2014 season when they had Fred Jackson and C.J. Spiller, who clearly were at the end of the road. And then that's when they went out and they got Sean McCoy. And they also drafted Carlos Williams that year as well. And that worked out pretty well.
Mike, what about Kareem Hunt? And I know that there's a lot that is left to be desired with Kareem Hunt, and his future is a little bit murky, but I have a hard time believing that somebody that's still as young as he is, as talented as he is, won't get a second chance in the NFL, and a team that will be willing to give him that second chance will get a very good running back at a discount price.
True. I would be hesitant, obviously, because I don't think you'll be available, given all of these new incidents, and it's not just the hotel video from Cleveland from last February. It's other, you know, nightclub things that are popping up with him. I think it's three incidents overall that the NFL is investigating. You add those all together and he could be in for a pretty lengthy suspension, in which case, you know, what's the point in trying to sign him and take that PR hit? As we've seen, you know, it's been a pretty messy couple of weeks or at least couple of days for the Redskins with Reuben Foster. I don't see this regime wanting to go through a similar situation. I don't think Kim Pegula would certainly be on board with some of the infractions that Kareem Hunt has made. And obviously they're public. I mean, everybody can see the video. Everybody's going to know exactly what he did. That's a pretty tough pill to swallow for the Bills. So I don't know if that would really be a realistic option for them.
Mike Rodak, ESPN.com. We've been talking to Mike. We haven't even really gotten to Josh Allen.
That's right.
What did you think of Allen Sunday? Is he ahead of where we would thought he would have been here in December 2018, Mike Rodak?
On the whole, no. Well, I guess let me rephrase that. The last couple games, yes, I think that he's ahead of where we would expect him to be in December. I think that part of it is true. But if you look at the entire season as a whole and how he's performed from week one up until now, I think it's right about where you would expect it for him. Statistically, you know, QBR-wise, if you want to read into that as a stat, he's right on average. He's a 53, which is right above 50, which is the average. It's actually pretty decent among all of the rookies. So we started tracking, ESPN did, QBR back in 2006, and I think that ranks 12th out of 60-something rookie quarterbacks over that time, which is a pretty good rank. However, if you look at some of the guys who are 1 from 11, it's all over the map. I mean, you have Deshaun Watson, you have Dak Prescott, who both had great rookie years. You also have guys like, I think, Tim Tebow's in there. Jake Locker might be in there, guys who kind of started off strong and then faded after that. So I'm not sure that really tells us a whole lot. I don't think, you know, there's been, again, looking on the whole, his entire season, enough evidence yet that, you know, he's going to succeed in the NFL. But I agree, the last couple of weeks, you know, we've seen tremendous strides. I mean, his QBR for both of those games has been north of 80, which is, you know, it's a 0 to 100 scale. That's pretty good. His grades on Pro Football Focus have been near the top of the league the last couple of weeks. I know the passing stats haven't really been there. The rushing stats certainly have, but he's passed the eye test, and that's the biggest difference, I think, for him compared to the first time around before his injury, is that he's clearly making progress from a making a better decision standpoint, being more accurate. There's still mistakes that are made out there, but overall, that seems to be coming together a little bit better than it did before his injury. So right now, I think, yes, he's at a good spot. I'm just not sure if it's exceeded expectations from day one when he was drafted. Where would he be in December? I think this is right around where we thought he would be.
I think it's going to be so interesting to watch how these quarterbacks, the rookie quarterbacks of the 2018 class, develop in year two. And why I'm excited and enthusiastic about Allen is, out of all of them, he has the most stable situation around him organizationally. I don't think you're going to see turnover in the coaching staff, whereas with Darnold, you're going to need a new head coach in the offseason, presumably. You already are looking for a head coach in Cleveland. We don't know about what Wilkes' future in Arizona is going to be. These are all things that you know, for a rookie quarterback, I mean, the guy that drafted you, that's the guy you want to develop a bond with, or you have a bond with, and now you've got to learn a new playbook and learn a new system and develop a new relationship with the head coach and whoever he decides to bring in. I mean, this bodes very well for Josh Allen in year two. And again, all things kind of pointing towards this 2019 season where the Bills could be in better shape than they've been in a long, long time.
I agree. I think it's a much more stable situation than all teams you mentioned. I don't know if that necessarily guarantees anything, but I think that could also raise the expectations to where, let's say, you know, you go into next year and the Jets have a new coach and a new coordinator. Maybe the Cardinals do. The Browns obviously do. And maybe those rookie or those second-year quarterbacks in those cases struggle. Well, there's going to be a mitigating factor where I think people will say, well, you know, give them some time. They're learning a new system, et cetera, et cetera. If you go into next year and the expectations are higher in Buffalo because there is the continuity, and then Josh Allen comes out of the gate and is underwhelming, then there's going to be some pressure on him and on the team as well, more so than those other cities. So it is a bit of a double-edged sword there. I mean, for instance, let's look at the Jaguars, I think, when they drafted Blaine Gabbert. You know, there was some continuity there with the coaching staff. I want to say Gus Bradley was there for quite a few years, and that never really helped him. Tennessee, there might have been some turnover with Jake Locker. But, yeah, I mean, it goes both ways. I think it's a good thing that there is the potential for Brian Daboll to be here for quite some time. Obviously, Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean. But at the same time, they're going to need to perform up to expectations next year, because the expectations will be higher next year. And if they don't do enough out of the gate, then that's when the heat will be on at that point.
My quick thought on the matchup this week, you have Jamal Adams, a safety for the Jets, saying it's personal. Ooh, wow. Well, I'm not – okay, whatever gets him fired up for this game. How do you see this game playing out?
I do see the Jets as being a little bit more prepared than they were in that last game. Obviously, they've been bad the last few weeks, 0-3 in the last three games. They've given up the most yards per game over that stretch, and – I would hope for the Jets' sake that they come out with a little bit more fire in preparation, and maybe the Jamal Adams quote is, you know, an indicator of that. But, you know, I still see this being a game where Phil should be favored and are favored, you know, for the first time this season. And, you know, I see them winning it, but I do see the Jets putting up more of a fight, just because, you know, at the end of the day, I think these teams are closer in quality than their last meeting showed, and obviously the, you know, 31-point disparity in that game.
Mike, what are you working on for ESPN.com?
Yeah, just looking forward to the coaching cycle, which is coming up, obviously, in the offseason. I know Leslie Frazier was a name who popped up a little bit last year. You know, when the Colts job came open for the second time after Josh McDaniels pulled out, that was when he interviewed for that job, and he recently came up on the list of the Fritz Pollard Alliance, which is the minority coaching candidates you should be considered for jobs. He was one of the names on that list. So just looking, you know, forward to his credentials and the possibility that he might become a head coach again next season, as you know, as there happens every year, there's going to be several openings that come open across the league.
Mike, appreciate the time. We'll see you Sunday. Thanks so much.
You got it, guys.
Thanks, Mike Rodak, ESPN.com. You can read his work there. Always appreciate Mike giving us some of his time here in the Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia. And if you came in late or missed any of that, we'll get it for you on demand shortly at ESPNRochester.com. All right, Gene, at the line of scrimmage here, I'm going to call a little audible for NFL appetizers. Let's just run through these really quick. We know about Benjamin, of course, becoming an official free agent and visiting Kansas City today. Sammy Watkins, I hope you're sitting down. He's been kind of questionable here with a foot injury, so maybe that's the reason why you have Kelvin Benjamin taking a visit there in Kansas City. Also, Andre Holmes now, of course, as you probably have already heard, finding a new home in Denver yesterday.
Yeah, the situation with Alex Smith, it's serious. 106.7, the Fan in Washington, was the first to report that Smith has had, quote, devastating complications after the surgery on his leg, and this is because of a post-op infection, and it's going to require further procedures to eliminate the infection. There are various reports out there right now that even though this injury happened on the Sunday prior to Thanksgiving, that today Alex Smith is still in the hospital. And you know it's serious because the Redskins put out a statement thanking fans and asking for privacy.
Alyssa Ennis is the ex-girlfriend of Reuben Foster. And now she's come out in the media and admitted that she lied in court when she said Foster never struck her. That was from the domestic incident that occurred back in February. She lied under oath because she said she, quote, loved Foster and didn't want to end his NFL career. And, of course, Foster, again, with an incident, domestic violence incident against her last weekend in the team hotel for the 49ers when they were in Tampa Bay. She was shocked, mentioned that she was shocked that Foster was claimed by Washington, and he remains on the commissioner exempt list.
Eli Manning is set to break a record this week.
Come on.
Yeah, not a good one. the Giants have lost 111 games that Manning has started. It puts him third on the most career losses list for starting quarterbacks. Now, if the Giants lose on Sunday, congratulations to Eli. He's going to move into a tie with Brett Favre for the second most losses in another year. Should Manning come back, he would easily break Vinny Testaverde's record for the most career losses of any starting quarterback. Testaverde went 90-123-1 in his 21 years.
The Packers fired Mike McCarthy abruptly after Sunday's loss in Arizona against Arizona in Green Bay. But they gave McCarthy one final chance for closure as he addressed the team yesterday. After practice, an interim coach, Joe Philbin, told reporters that it was an emotional speech about football, about winning football games. Aaron Rodgers now remains the only connection to the last Packers team that played for anyone other than Mike McCarthy. That dates all the way back to 2005.
Finally, the NFL has released the names of the 32 players who are nominees for the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award. All nominees are going to get to wear a helmet decal recognizing the honor for the rest of the season. The Bills nominee is Lorenzo Alexander. Lorenzo Alexander, he's done numerous events in Western New York through the Aces Foundation he set up. He's been a strong presence as a mentor to the South Park High School football program. The winner will be presented during the NFL Honors event the night before the Super Bowl. A $500,000 donation will be made in the winner's name to Character Playbook, the NFL United Way's digital character education program. An additional $250,000 will be donated to the charity of the winner's choice.
That's NFL Appetizers, and it's brought to you exclusively by Alex's Place. Alex's Place, making mouthwatering barbecue baby back ribs for over 25 years, online at alexsribs.com.
Yeah, and coming up in the 5 o'clock hour, I'm going to tell you why the Buffalo Bills, even though you think they need to go heavy on wide receivers and they're clearing the deck for wide receivers, when it comes to the draft, I'm going to tell you to slow down a little bit.
I'm going to sit back and enjoy a nice Mad Hatter cigar this weekend as my fantasy team just sits and collects points on a bye.
Yeah, I got to go do some shopping over there. Mad Hatter's Hideaway is on Culver Road in Irondequoit. 300 varieties of cigars to choose from. You're going to go get yours, Danger, if you win.
Yeah, I got to go see Nick and the guys and get the best that they have to offer.
They also have the largest selection of CBD products in Rochester. If you know what that is about, then that's the place to go to. Mad Hatter's Hideaway, Culver Road, just south of the 104. Easy to get to in Irondequoit when you stop into Mad Hatter's Hideaway. Please tell them you heard about it here on the Sports Bar.
We've got Happy Hour on the way next in the Sports Bar. Danger and Battaglia, another round of shots as well. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. AM 950, 95.7 FM, ESPN Rochester.
Rochester's most listened to sports station invites you into the locker room at ESPNRochester.com. Our little tribe of super fans, sports junkies, and competitive degenerates. Join now for breaking news updates, free tickets and prizes, game highlights, player and expert interviews, and unprecedented access to the best that ESPN Rochester has to offer. The locker room at ESPNRochester.com. Free to join and packed with action. From AM 950 and 95.7 FM, the sports leader, ESPN Rochester.